I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. In the midst of several city-based temporary shelters closing and the spring season returning, an anti-poverty organization is demanding that City Council decriminalize tent encampments in public spaces. As city councilors return to one of the first in-person meetings since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty organized a press conference demanding the repeal of bylaws against tent encampments in parks. The bylaws are 608 Section 13 and 14 that are focused on camping and lodging and tent structures in public areas. While the city has provided these shelter hotels, temporary beds, and warming centers for the city's unhoused, OCAP says it falls short by more than 1,500 beds, leaving several individuals with no alternative than public areas. One of the speakers outside of City Hall is Red Stoverman, who says the inefficient housing system is greatly affecting Indigenous individuals, especially in downtown Toronto.
Hello, my name is Red Stoneman. I'm from the Wolf Clan, and I come from Brampton. I'm living in Peel right now. And I'm Cree and I'm Dene, living here on Anishinaabe territory. And I wanted to share a little bit about my own story and let you know that, you know, my grandfather, he was homeless on the streets of Edmonton for many, many years, and he survived the residential schools. And, you know, our city is not all that different. A lot of the survivors you see out here on the streets are survivors of the residential school era. They're survivors of the 60s scoop, and you see nowadays the millennial scoop. You know, 52.2% of all children in foster care right now are Indigenous in Canada. And so we know that those children are not receiving the right care, right? And then that's when we see this system and this cycle of poverty, addiction, and mental illness in Indigenous communities. It happens to all peoples, but we know that here in Toronto, there's an overwhelming majority of folks on the street who identify as First Nations people. And so this is the aftermath. This is one of the few, you know, effects of the colonialism of their state. It's easy to talk about reconciliation. It's another thing to do the work. Oftentimes myself and other Indigenous folks in the community who do land back work, we're asked to come out and talk about reconciliation. We haven't seen reconciliation yet, but our people are still living in encampments. And then you come and brutalize them, and you stomp out their sacred fires, and you arrest our elders and our land defenders. Shame on you.
Stoverman says she wants to remind individuals that no one is homeless, just houseless, because of the current system of the city.
Land back is also about supporting the houseless community. We are not homeless peoples. We have a home. Turtle Island is our home. There are people without houses. People need to remember that. This is our land. You're a guest here. We made it so that you could come here peacefully. Our ancestors did not take care of you folks for you to live in tents and be homeless. It's wrong. That's not how our people would have treated you. So I just wanted to remind folks that no one is homeless. There's only houseless people.
Another speaker is Gru, who has experienced the Toronto shelter system firsthand for more than 8 years. He shares that the uncertainty was the most difficult challenge that he faced each night.
In a minute, I'm going to change our focus just a little bit, because today isn't just about how awful homelessness is. Don't get me wrong, homelessness is terrible, but that's not why we're here today. People often ask, what's the worst part of homelessness for you, Gru? What's the hardest part? Is it the weather? We need to seem hard. Is it the violence from cops, from neighbors, from strangers? Maybe it's the dehumanization as people just glance over you and forget that you even exist. And you know, all of these things, yes, they are hard. In and of themselves, they are struggles. But the killer for me was always the uncertainty. Is tonight going to be the night that there's violence against me? Is tonight going to be the night that the cops slash my tent open? Or that someone sets my tent on fire? Or that I suffer from frostbite? This uncertainty of like, is tonight, that was always hard. Or maybe tonight is just going to be like every other night and I'll be cold and miserable and have to worry about how to survive tomorrow when it comes, if it comes. These problems haven't entirely gone away within the shelter system. There's still a lot of lateral violence between heavily traumatized individuals. There's still top-down violence from staff, security, cops, because the cops have not gone away. There's still constant dehumanization, both from the people in this building, the man in that office, and from our neighbors in the neighborhoods that the shelters have been put in. But the uncertainty of where to sleep, where to eat, where to bathe, even where to charge my phone, all that's gone away, so I guess I should be thankful.
Further, Gru reminded the crowd about the city council's plans to vote on the fate of the shelter hotels. He wonders where the city expects all individuals living there to go when there are no alternatives left for them.
In a short while, literally just a few moments, six of our councillors are going to be sitting down inside here to discuss decommissioning these shelter hotels. And I have just one question for them. Where do you expect us to go? Where is their housing supply? All that we are asking for is affordable, safe, accessible housing, and I don't see any of it anywhere in this city. I've been at the Novotel for over a year now, and I was one of the lucky ones. When I showed up, I got, within a couple of months, a caseworker and a housing worker. For too many of my neighbors, that's an impossible dream. There are three caseworkers in that hotel. For 270 residents, there is one housing worker. And there's no way for any of these staff to effectively do their jobs when they have to deal with 90 people each, or in the case of the housing worker, with nearly 300 people on his own. Each of them, in reality, only has a caseload of about 30 people, and so the other 180 or so are completely left in the dark. The problem is, even with all of those housing supports, I still haven't come anywhere near finding affordable housing. It's not for lack of trying. The housing worker has even managed to get a couple of apartment viewings for me in my price range, as long as you factor in the THAP housing voucher. The trouble is that the moment landlords hear that this prospective tenant is homeless and coming from a shelter, boom, no, instantly no. They never say it to your face, but you can tell in their eyes, you can see the moment that they decide, I am not going to take the chance on a formerly homeless person. And then a couple of weeks later, inevitably, we're following up with the landlord and we hear, another applicant was a better business choice for us. We were worried the group couldn't or wouldn't pay the rent. Now, at the end of the day, mine is only one story. Anecdotes aren't data. So let's talk data for a second here. Novotel brags that they've housed 30 people since they opened. The city claims they've permanently housed 3,400 people across 90 shelters. Sorry, from 90 shelters, which is actually the lowest number that they've claimed in the last 4 years, but it's still 3,400 people. It means that the average individual shelter moved 38 people into housing this last year. It's not enough. You heard earlier from Randy about how many more people are entering the system than leaving. Well, let's also be clear. Not everyone who comes to 129 Peter looking for housing, looking for shelter, is able to find their way into the system. At the end of February, there were 9,500 people who the city knew were homeless in Toronto. The night before last, 7,800 of them were in the shelters. So there's about 1,700 people who every single night are unable to find a way into the shelter system and have to live outside, unsheltered, in the cold, in the rain, in the snow. Last night was absolutely devastating for weather. I didn't want to go out in it, and I've lived in this for now 8 years. If councillors decommission these hotels, I can assure you of one thing. There will be mass camps in this city, across this city, by May 24th. And when enforcement is sent to uphold these anti-camping bylaws, bylaw 608.13 and 608.14, we will stand up as a community, housed and unhoused alike, to say in one voice, loud and clear, housing is a human right. Housing fixes this. Your shelter system is not now, has never been, will never be housing, but these shelter hotels were a good step.
CGRU had the opportunity to speak with GRU, who said it was crucial to build community and solidarity against these housing issues.
I'm here today because this issue directly affects me right now. But even if it didn't, I show up to these events, like Joey said, to stand in solidarity, to like Sarah said, to build connections between the homeless community and the other communities around that are also being oppressed by our current system, so that we can build something better. Today was definitely about me. I came from an encampment. I'm currently in one of the shelter hotels that they're considering decommissioning over the course of the next 24 months. But even when it's not about me, it is. We're all in this together, and I know that has sort of become cliche over the course of the pandemic and was used as propaganda, but I truly believe that the only way for us to build a better world is for all of us to work together on that.
In the interim, the city is planning to decommission at least 5 shelter hotels. There are currently 27 operating at the moment. These hotels give shelter to more than 3,000 individuals per night, according to the City of Toronto website. In the summer of 2021, the introduction of the bylaws made sleeping in public spaces illegal. Several police officers entered areas like Trinity Bellwoods and Lamport Stadium to dismantle and uproot individuals living in tents. Fences were installed to prevent individuals from staying or returning to the parks. The events caused uproar from organizations like OCAP and others, especially as videos of clashes between police and protesters circulated online. More details to come. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.